Hello everyone, welcome to a podcast session by the HISA team. As usual, every Monday we meet up and we sit down as we discuss on what's happening across various financial markets. We always focus greatly on the Nairobi Securities Exchange as we give you guys what's really happening within also not only the local market but also global markets. So for the first time this week, we're actually going to look on what's happening on global markets. I know Markets Monday has always been primarily about the Nairobi Securities Exchange, but today we are also going offshore, but just telling you guys what stocks are really moving, really making moves out here. For all of you who are wondering, the main reason why we are actually getting into the offshore market is because, first of all, HISA is coming in soon. Within the next few weeks, you'll be able to access data from various financial markets, both locally and globally. Trading primarily will certainly be open for US markets. So that's one thing that we're really hoping will come up soon. So for those of you who are joining us for the first time, if you're yet to get the HISA app, please, you can always get in and download HISA on your mobile phone. As usual, every Monday, I'm joined by my co-host. I'll let him introduce himself and then we kickstart with the local markets.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Davis Kadinji and I'm glad to be here with you this morning.
Thanks a lot, Davis. It's a very chilly morning here in Nairobi. I don't know if the market will be chilly as well, Davis.
Wow. I have no idea. wait and see.
Yeah, but if we kickstart off with the performance of the NSE indices, the All Share Index was up last week. The NSE 20 was down last week, and then the NSE 25 was up on the other end. Davis, because we always know that the All Share Index generally is a normal mood for all. It's more like a market weighted index. What does that give? Does it mean, because it's if you check on year to date, the All Share Index is actually up 12.5%. Does it mean that the market sentiment for the NSE is improving, or it just means guys are trading based on certain news that's coming in? Because last week we had news for I&M, which I know we'll touch on to later. We also had news about we had various news about KCB, that so KCB move up as well. Generally, we're seeing a positive outlook. What's your take on that as we begin?
Yeah, I've actually been waiting for a catalyst for our market, something to really get things rolling, and one of them that I've seen of late is actually that report that was done by the CBK. I believe they did a survey on banks, and banks notably mentioned that the Q1 earnings were really good. Of course, as we'd mentioned here on this podcast before, banks were likely to reduce their loan loss provisions because non-performing loan deterioration was quite low. You know, it only increased from, I believe, 14.1% to 14.6%, and banks were more than adequately provisioned for these loan losses. So I believe that this could be one of those catalysts. As we know, when banking stocks start moving upward, the entirety of the market starts moving upward. So when banks start announcing good results in Q1, Q2 going forward, assuming that deterioration of loans doesn't really go on the uptick, that could be a good catalyst for the rest of the market, because banks tend to uplift the markets. Good dividends will really bring back investors into this market. We know, of course, that foreigners are still net sellers, and that's a bit daunting. We'd expect that foreigners would really come back to the market, but it seems that they've really shied away. They've really been afraid. But we hope that they'll come back, or rather that locals will actually take that initiative and drive the markets higher up, because a lot of securities are, on relative terms, undervalued, to be honest.
Davis, when you talk about the CBK report, maybe if you just expound a little bit on it, what it was really about, so that at least our listeners, those who are listening about the CBK report for the first time, at least get to understand that whatever we are learning from, whatever we are speaking of, is not really something that is new to the market. If you just touch a little bit on that and tell guys what that would really be about.
I'm actually trying to look for it. So the CBK did a report, a survey of sorts with Kenyan banks. And this survey served to show that in Q1, so this is Q1. Q1, as you know, our year is divided into four quarters, so 3 months each quarter. So banks reported that on average, things have really improved overall. The expectations that in light of COVID, non-performing loans would shoot through the roof, businesses would suffer really badly. This wasn't actually the case, and this is true globally. So the CBK did that survey to see the situation on the ground, and the results were actually pretty good, and banks are looking optimistic going forward as recovery efforts are continuing and the like. I'll try to look for the reports.
All right. Yeah. I guess that's something that's very interesting, Davis. Getting now to look on the specific individual markets, the individual stocks that are listed on the Nairobi Securities Exchange, we saw BOC Kenya become the top gain last week, having about 12.7% in share price gain. Thereafter, what I'd really want guys to really look into is KCB, which was up about 10.5. Sorry, BOC is up 9.5. That's during the week and not 12.7, but KCB was up about 10.1% in share price. I don't know what would be your take on that, because I saw that rally with KCB also gave a little bit of a buffer to equity, a little bit of, because we always know what we usually say on the market is that KCB and equity generally, they work like twins. What would be your take?
Yeah, I believe KCB finished a certain acquisition. I'm not sure of which bank. That possibly could have been a catalyst for the share price rallying, and you know, investors are pricing in good future prospects, the good integration in light of that bank. For BOC, it's possible that shareholders are taking into account the takeover actually being completed, that one by Cabasid, and so yeah, them moving into the stock in light of that news. At least that's what I'd make of both those counters.
All right, it's interesting. And then also just to clarify to guys, I'm just looking on to give guys a correct data. Last week, KCB gained about 4.2%. Year-to-date gains have been about 10.1%. So that's something I know we'll be really looking up to. On the other hand, I know what guys are probably wondering is what company really came up on the loser side. On the loser side, not really much. I'm still seeing it's the usual suspects. We're seeing Standard Group down 10%. For those of you who are wondering just how Standard Group really trades, why I usually call it the usual suspect is because you might find Standard Group was down 10% within the week by about less than 1,000 shares. So I might not really look at it as a point of, because these are those volatile companies that they're gaining today 10%, tomorrow they're down 10%. The liquidity on the market is also not really as high as what you'd expect. Looking at it, I'm seeing housing finance is coming down.
that's really unfortunate, but it was expected. Literally, people are buying into it because of speculation, you know.
Yeah, because of the news by Britam.
Yeah, and actually, the quote unquote news, because Britam itself, the management said that this was something in the media, that it wasn't actually a true account, because the management mentioned that they will actually take steps to ensure that housing finance recovers. So they'll look for a strategic partner and the like. But the specifics of this going forward will be announced, I believe, in half year 21, when management will announce the 2021-2025 plan. Yeah, so a lot of us are really looking forward to that, to see the recovery plans for Britam and also for housing finance, just to see the way forward. Because if they were to realize that loss and sell their, I believe they acquired their position maybe at 2.4 billion or something, around right 2 now, billion there. And then right now it's valued at 600 million. So yeah, they'd get a loss million. Of around 70%. That is insanely high. I mean, I'd understand why they'd want to try make it recover. But going forward, it really is hard. Because I remember the government has put up that company, that holding company that's supposed to help people get loans, mortgages. Yeah, I wonder if that will be a risk factor going forward.
Kenya Mortgage Refinancing
Corporation, or if they're working together, we'll see going forward.
Yeah, but I know that because, you know, as much as housing finance has been a dominant player when it comes to mortgage, other companies and other banks also came up with various products. Maybe what we should start looking at is mortgage-backed securities.
Yeah, we mess things up like the US did. Eh?
Yeah, because like if we can be able to get a mortgage-backed security, oh man! But if housing finance is the one to be the issue, I think it will be something else, yeah, as well on the market.
I, Okay, I'm reckoning a guess, but I think banks actually do that. So you can sell the risk that you have to another bank. You just sell your... Yeah.
So I think they actually do it, but it's controlled.
Yeah.
There are various aspects that banks can actually work around that, Davis.
Mm.
Going in further, I'm seeing, checking again, I'm checking on the HISA app and I'm seeing that I&M is up 9.1%. There's been news on I&M last week. There's news on I&M today. For those of you who are yet to get this, you can always get the data on HISA app. If you log into the discussion platform on HISA app, you'll definitely check. There was a some material announcement that was shared as well today regarding I&M. But last week there was good news on I&M, and also today there's something happening. Davis, you don't have to touch on that.
No, you tell us first before I make some small comments.
All right. So last week we saw I&M complete 90% acquisition of Orient Bank Limited, which is a Ugandan-based lender. So this was something that I&M had initially announced. They had proposed in it. Orient Bank is one of the most, it's a fundamentally stable bank in Uganda. And so I think, as guys have said, that looks like Kenyan banks are on quote-unquote steroids. So banks are just buying anything that they can be able to hold their hands on, as long as it's going to be able to give them a lot of assets. And also, they're taking advantage of banks that have a lot of potential but are slightly strained. And I think I&M, this is one of the best acquisitions I've seen I&M do in recent times. On the other hand, what's happening today about I&M is that I&M had issued a bonus notice. So there was a bonus that I&M had declared on 31st of March 2021, and the books are closing today. So if someone was to buy, there's a high possibility you might buy it today if you want to get the bonus. But also you need to understand the various risks, which I'll let Davis just touch on, whenever a company announces a bonus. And I&M's bonus is on a ratio of 1:1.
Yeah, I found this bonus really interesting. Like, it was hard to make to make sense of it, to be honest. Okay, so for those who don't understand a bonus, it's like, let's say you take a pizza, it's cut into four pieces. Now all you do is just cut it into more. So it's more people getting a slice of the same pizza. So in this case, more people getting a slice of the same company. So if you're holding shares, you'll get another additional share. So effectively what the company did is that they just capitalized their profits. They use retained earnings to pay a bonus, which is in the form of additional shares. And so for me, it was hard to make sense of it. You know, some were arguing that it made business sense because people prefer permanent capital structures, and you know, the company has less reserves. Like, all that I&M did with this transaction, this was just an accounting transaction. They merely just moved capital from the non-permanent side, that's retained earnings, and they moved it to the permanent side, which is share capital. I know, just jargon. That's all I'm saying. So I didn't really make much sense of it. I&M has really been doing these bonuses, if I'm not mistaken, cutting the share price, and the share price isn't that high. You'd expect a company to do maybe a 1-for-1 split to be something like BAT, such that more people can be able to buy the shares, because you know, 100 shares of BAT is roughly 40k right now, almost 50. So it didn't really make much sense of the deal. It just seemed like an accounting transaction of sorts, but at least I guess shareholders are happy because of that news, or you're getting more shares. The earnings per share, of course, will go down. The equity will increase. Anyway.
So I don't know, Davis. As much as we're seeing on the other side, there's a positive edge of I&M acquiring Orient Bank in Uganda, the bonus issue might be able to liquidate the news. To literally put it, there's positive news on one side, but the bonus issue, because this is the second year running where I&M is actually issuing a bonus.
Oh, rather than, was it a dividend? Did they announce a dividend?
Yeah, they did. They're doing both, and the dividend, I think the books closed
That's interesting. Week. Oh, so for those who may not know, that means that today I&M was trading at maybe 40 something. It will drop to, is it 23? It will drop to half.
And I think this is what happened. The last time when they issued a dividend as well, I&M was trading at a higher price, a bonus. Then again, it dropped all the way, I think, to around levels of, I think, about 63 back then.
Yeah.
But so this it might be a way that the company is trying to increase liquidity.
Yeah. And also, okay, the company isn't bad. I mean, it's trading on relative terms. If you look at the entirety of the industry, it's trading at a discount to book value. But the problem is that its return on equity tends to be low on relative terms. Maybe that's why it is the low share price.
Yeah. Most likely. That's one thing that we're looking into. Davis, probably as we look into, as we probably look a lot into the NSE, what would be your stocks this week before we touch on the usual counter?
The usual. Actually, on that news for issuing shares, Crown actually is issuing a rights issue. I don't know if you saw that one. So, Crown Paints, the one who's delayed the results, which is likely, of course, I think they announced a profit warning, so the results won't be all that great. So they said that they'll do a rights issue. A rights issue is whereby you can buy, existing shareholders can buy shares of a company at a discount. So I think the latest one was it Kenjin around 2016? Yeah. There was one for KQ, I think, in 2011. And these rights issues have gone not so well, but anyway.
Also, you see the one for Crown is coming at 10 shillings.
It's really going to dilute present shareholders.
It's going to dilute it.
Yeah.
But then, guys, look at it from this angle. This company is yet to release their financial results. They issued a profit warning, which is not for the first year, last year as well.
Mm.
I don't know if it's your choice to buy. Once again, remember, whatever we always discuss here is not it's really not an investment advice. You need to do your own research before you can be able to trade. But I'm just wondering, as an individual, my personal thoughts is you're buying into Crown. The company is yet to release the results. They're asking for more money, and of which they're saying it's for expansion. They need to really give guys a clear path for that.
Yeah, and
but
also,
I still think they need to set their books straight, mostly when it comes to releasing the financials, before they come to the market and ask for the rights issue. So I really hope that is going to come at least before the end of the month. They should be able to release the results to the public.
Yeah. I looked at the financials a bit quickly. So they have a gearing ratio of 60%. So that's a debt to equity ratio, you know. So their balance sheet is levered in excess. Okay, not in excess really. It's just a bit, there's more debt than equity. Let's just say that. So if they were to increase their shares by 700, this would mean that their share capital structure, okay. For those who may not get, assume you had a business, your capital structure is made up of debt and equity. Equity is your personal stake within the business. Debt is what creditors have a claim to. Okay, so with an increase of 700 shares of at that price of it would be 700 million in a sense. Their share capital would increase to roughly 2 billion. That would be equity, and that would decrease the gearing ratio to roughly 50%. So it's just interesting. I'm assuming they're doing this because their interest expenses, okay, they're not all that high, but they want to reduce them. I believe that was one of the reasons that they stated they want to increase the equity within the company. The problem with, maybe we should mention this, the problem with increasing equity within a company is that for present shareholders, it reduces your returns because you're getting diluted. It's like, again, now the same pie thing, the same pizza, you're cutting it into more slices. So earnings per share will go down and the like. And then debt is cheaper in that it has a tax shield because you pay your interest expenses before you pay net income. Yeah. So I believe that this initiative or this what is it called, this rights issue, first and foremost, it will really be a show of the ability of our markets to attract capital. You know, we haven't seen at an IPO of late and seen whether it was undersubscribed or oversubscribed. So yeah, really longing to see how the subscription will be on this.
Davis, are you positive on Crown? Just absolutely not an advice, but just what would you really say? Would you be positive on Crown? Because, you know, whatever is going to happen on Crown is really going to say a lot about the NSE.
Mm.
And also it's coming at a time when the economy and investors are really trying to trade as cautiously as possible.
Yeah.
What would be your thoughts? Would you be optimistic about Crown? Just give guys your thoughts. Necessarily not an investment advice, guys.
I am really not sure. I really need to look at their financials, see the competition. One, I wonder why they've been reducing earnings year over year. Wonder if revenues have been going down. Okay, me, I'm just giving you a checklist of things to look at, whether revenue prospects going forward are, because I don't give investment advice. I just make observations and then you guys come to your conclusion. Look if the revenue prospects have been going down going forward, whether they're facing stiffer competition, whether they're adequately structured. I believe, honestly, with the increase of equity, now their gearing ratio or debt to equity will be 50-50, if I were to make a rough guess, which is an adequate shareholding structure. So it's not that necessarily a bad thing, but you have to realize there'll be a lot of dilution going forward. And yeah, it's really hard to tell. I really need to look at the company much, much closer.
Absolutely. I'm checking on his end. I'm just seeing Crown is already up about 8%.
8%?
During today's trading. But
that's interesting. I wonder if people really do understand.
But let me just give you guys the disclaimer that it's only traded 800 shares.
Those are market movers.
So market movers, actually, you know, if the liquidity that Crown has, if you trade, if it goes up 8% within 10 days, it's up 80%.
Jeez.
Because it's, you only need to trade about 200 shares and you know nobody's going to come back later.
But now how do you exit a position? Like if you're a larger shareholder, how do you exit?
That's where the challenge is.
Your
portfolio is up 10%, your portfolio is up 80%, but you can't be able to exit.
But you can't sell. You just have to sell at the lower price, then the share price keeps on going down.
I know this happened with most of the guys who have huge shareholding in Nairobi Business Ventures. When NBV stopped trading at 0.5, back then, I think it was around 0.5 or thereabouts, and then it resumed trading in December, and it was up about 500%, going up to when they came back to trading, it was at about five shillings. And so you're seeing your portfolio is high, you have 800,000 shares of Nairobi Business Ventures, but you can't exit. So these are just the things that guys really go into.
Yeah, but giving credit where it's due, the NSE has really been trying. You know, they've introduced SLB. Okay, they've tried a lot of things. Unfortunately,
CDSE has introduced
SLB. CDSE has introduced SLB. Derivatives were introduced. A lot of these things to impact the markets. Actually, I was hearing a talk the other day and someone mentioned that rather than stewarding retail investors toward these products, that they should do it to fund managers more so, because fund managers are the ones who can adequately execute these things, can bring liquidity into the markets through these things. So maybe some more investor education needs to be done to fund managers such that they might, you know, trade these products more and increase market liquidity, because that's a serious issue in our markets.
Yeah, and then I also think the uptake, now that you've mentioned the derivatives market for the NSE, I think that the uptake for the derivatives products are a lot of guys are taking up these new instruments. I'm seeing on the derivatives market, last week we had about 203 volumes. That is the number of contracts that were moved. That's valued at around 8.29 million that were traded on the derivatives market.
Oh, that's good.
So we have about 378 open interest on the market. So the previous week, that was week 17, there were 344 open interest positions on the market. So that means guys are really uptaking this. And you can always be able to engage your broker so that you can be able to access trading on the derivatives market.
Yeah, if you're a smaller shareholder, derivatives expose you to a lot more this cuts both ways, of course.
So guys, one thing that you need to understand about derivatives is you can always go, you'll make money from whether the market is going the prices are going down or going up, really depending on the position that you're holding. If you have a long position on the market, when the price is going up, you're good. If you have a short position on the market, when the price is going down, you're definitely making money. And if you're wondering about derivatives, if you check on HISA, there's a podcast which we had a discussion with a few guys on the NSE's derivatives market. And they really explained a lot about investing on the derivatives market. So you might also want to check that out on HISA. I'm sure I'll also be able to share the link with you guys. So if you're listening from both Twitter Spaces or the Telegram forum, you can always be able to check out. I'll share the tweet and also share it out on HISA app as well, with the link, so you can be able to listen to the podcast on derivatives. Now, I guess we're done with the NSE, but we have the usual suspect, which we have to talk about. Davis, Safaricom continues to maintain a dominant position on the NSE. Last week, the total market turnover for the week was at 2.6 billion, and Safaricom was at 1.7 billion.
Oh, that's roughly 65% of... It should be above 60% of
the 65.47% of the NSE, to be specific, went to Safaricom alone.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Yeah, it's like we talk about Safcom every week.
and then, you know, Safcom continues to gain in share price. This is despite us going through a few reports last week where we saw a few investment banks actually say Safcom might come down as they release the results. If you're wondering, guys, Safcom is set to release the results on Thursday this week. That is on the 13th of May. I believe if the new update that we are working on will incorporate the corporate actions calendar for the NSE, so you don't have to worry. This data will also be shared to you guys later. Davis, guys are still positive on Safcom.
Yeah, I really don't think people are pricing in the results of the company. What they're pricing in is the Ethiopia expansion. If you're to hear Ethiopia expansion has been shut down, wow, things will be bad.
So I was having this discussion with an analyst from one of the banks, and he said, Safaricom, we are going north. So you see, when someone says we're going north, technically it's like, we're seeing in global markets, guys say we're going to the moon. Safcom, we're saying we're going north. So north is Ethiopia. So when you're going into Ethiopia, until we get to Ethiopia, the price might continue rallying. Once again, remember, this is not an investment advice. This is just a discussion I was having with an analyst, and he mentioned that. So that's one thing we might be able to look into. So I guess that would be it for the local market, Davis.
Yeah. Can move on to international.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, have you been seeing commodity prices of late? Wow.
Copper has gained. I don't know. Copper gained today. Gold has been on the rise. Silver on the other side.
Lumber. Imagine this was I think statistics done. So, with regard to lumber prices, I think they've gone up by 300% in the past year. So effectively, if you the amount of lumber that you that was sufficient to build 10 houses last year, like at that particular price point, is only sufficient to buy to build 2 houses right now. You can imagine that thing has rallied. Yeah, you could have just bought lumber and sat and then started selling to people. It really is interesting. And a lot of these things, okay, initially what people thought it was is because of the Fed printing money. For context, you know, the Fed has printed roughly 20% of all dollars in existence in the past 1 year alone. So, of course, inflation is likely to come in, and more so asset price inflation, because, there's now more money chasing fewer goods. But then now you have to add or factor supply chain shocks. A lot of people were not expecting a V-shaped recovery. They weren't expecting things to come back to the market online almost immediately, and for things to go as they have gone in light of the vaccines being spread and the like. So there's been such a serious recovery, it's causing supply chain shocks, because a lot of industries went offline and then now they're being forced to go back online when demand is surging. So you have multiple facets of problems along the supply chain that's causing asset prices to really inflate, because of course these costs have to be passed on to the final consumer, and this of course is causing inflation, but the Fed argues that there's no inflation. Yeah, and eventually it may force them to raise rates, which will, you know, force share prices down in the US market, interestingly. So a lot of things happening everywhere, to be honest.
So I'm also just checking again. Lumber is up 93% year to date.
Yeah.
And right now, in the past 1 month, it's been up about 52%. Today alone, it's already up 2%. The last 1 week, it's been up 12.3%.
Yeah, okay.
So we still have products globally that can actually be able to make 100% gain, apart from Nairobi Business Ventures and of course Bitcoin and stuff like that.
And Dogecoin.
Dogecoin.
Yeah.
So there are a few products as well that guys can, because I'm seeing if this price sustains, then if the price continues to sustain, then we might see 100% turnover probably before the end of the month.
It's a good time to sell a house if you have one. What? The prices have really gone up.
Guys, don't sell your houses.
And then invest in other things.
Absolutely. In a few things here and there. Davis, if you're looking on to the local markets, there's one important question that I'm seeing. Somebody has just sent me on the live chat. He sent me an inbox and he's saying, on the Kenya-Tanzania sort of like the relations, what can we talk about the gold reserve in both the two countries and how it might be able to affect the Tanzanian economy? I don't know if we should leave that for We're Curious or we should leave that for Wednesday during the bulls and bears, when we talk about the effects of various commodities within a few things. But also I'm seeing there are more questions coming in on lumber. I believe we'll be able to talk into that in a few minutes. One thing that I'd want to just ask, Davis, what would be your thoughts on oil? And we're seeing copper as well, prices for copper also going way, way up, but gold is also stable as well. Gold year to date it's a trading at about, it's lost about 3.2% in value year to date, monthly up about 5.8%. And today alone, gold has traded, earlier on it was at 0.1, now it's already up at 0.2.
With regard to the Tanzania question, maybe we come back to that on Wednesday or Friday, so we can go more in depth. With regard to gold acts as a good hedge for inflation and the like, because gold adjusts upward for inflation. So if people have inflation fears, gold will continue to go up. I know last year gold went up quite significantly as people moved to quote-unquote safer assets until the Fed bailed out the entirety of the market, and it became more favorable to be in stocks rather than gold. But it seems that investors are moving back to gold. With regard to oil, this is interesting. So Brent crude is trading at around 69. So Brent crude is our reference point. We don't do Texas. That's so for the US market.
It's like a global benchmark.
Yeah. And so it's interesting. See, remember, was it last month or the month before? Our government ate into the margins of oil marketing companies, OMCs, and then they told them that they'll compensate them through the oil development levy, if I'm not mistaken. Now, that is really unsustainable. And you notice why? Because the price of oil just continues going up, meaning that going forward, they can't continue doing this. They can't keep on eating into OMC margins. They'll be forced to increase the price of oil in Kenya. So don't be surprised if you see fuel trading at 130, to be honest. Yeah, again, this is not, it's not advice, but it's just observations going forward. Because I believe,
and then that one we yet to factor in VAT, which would actually go up 18 to 20%.
VAT is 50%. Taxes on oil are roughly 50% of the entirety. Really interesting dynamics in this market. So among the risks that people have to take into account going forward, also oil has suffered from supply chain shocks here and there. And then now analysts, for example, in Goldman Sachs mentioned that oil and other commodities are entering a super cycle of sorts. So the share, you can find that prices may go back to the hundreds that these assets were trading at years before. Imagine oil trading at 100. Things would be really bad, because in a country like Kenya, you know that affects everything. Because if oil is up, price of transportation goes up, that means inflation goes up, everything will literally go up. So
manufacturing, a lot of these guys still use oil, they still use petroleum products as well.
Yeah.
So we're still oil products.
It will be really bad, because now inflation is now at roughly 5.6, 5.8. You can imagine if these things were taken into account, inflation would go up roughly 6-7%. So that means that for you to make returns, your nominal returns have to be in excess of 7-8%, because your real returns is the returns you get after inflation, will be roughly 1%. So you're gaining 1% a year. You really need to look for assets that ensure that there is wealth preservation, to be honest. So something to take into account going forward.
Davis, I'm just looking on the oil prices and I'm seeing that Brent 1 year ago at on a similar date today, it was a weekend, but on 8th of May 2020, Brent was actually at 21.
Yeah, see, and then now I think the Western Texas Index, I don't know if that's the name, the WTI, is the one that went to negative.
Yeah.
And that's why trading derivatives is just an interesting thing.
It's a challenge.
Hey, any people, imagine someone paying you to hold oil.
you know, guys never really understood how oil traded on a negative. Yeah. The challenge is this, you're trading on oil futures, and what usually happens in futures is, you're settled, in most of these commodity futures, you're usually settled on the commodity. An example is, if it's oil futures, you will always transfer the liability. Then at expiry of the contract, you need to accept delivery of that product. So you're an investment bank somewhere. You don't have any oil refinery. So you end up paying someone to take delivery of that oil because production is actually continuing.
Yeah, I was seeing some jokes that you guys are like, I mean, you just take all this oil, you just pour it into your bathtub and mgoje till oil recovers. Wow. Hey, yeah, crazy so times.
You remember that guy, and then you see the systems. The systems were not made to give you a negative trading price because it was something that guys had never taken into consideration. So remember the guy who bought oil and then the prices went and hit zero. Then they started up, right? They started rising. He thought he was making money again. While in reality, he was actually trading at negative.
Yeah.
And then when he got the call to fill up his margin, he needed $9 million.
Yeah, it was a crazy time, but we're glad the market is recovering. There was a lot of oil
guys,
supply.
Guys who went long have actually made money for oil during that time.
Yeah.
Guys who, I know they are year-long contracts. Guys who probably took that have probably been making money.
Yeah, if you'd invested in, I think, an oil company, like Warren Buffett did, he invested in Chevron at some point because he knew that this thing would eventually recover. No one, of course, expected it to recover as fast as it did. But you know,
we all didn't expect oil to really recover as quickly as it did because it's just 1 year. So it's something that's really, really interesting. I'm also seeing there's one question that has come in on oil. Someone is saying that do you think airlines are taking advantage of oil during times when the prices are low? My honest opinion is airlines alone are facing a challenge. So, because airlines, we've seen we've actually seen air travel really decline because of the various lockdowns that came in over the past 1 year. And I'm sure probably those airlines that already got into various contracts were still getting an advantage over it. But if an airline really, most of these airlines, like Kenya Airways, for example. I don't know if I should use Kenya Airways, but if airlines like KQ, most of these contracts are actually long-term contracts. So it's not like an airline would just go into the market today and say, you know what, we're now buying oil, we're buying jet fuel, and then the next time they're saying they're not buying this.
Yeah, they trade futures, if I'm not mistaken, to hedge.
Exactly, most of them. And this futures thing is one of the very interesting bits that one day when we're analyzing KQ, we could get into it, but today is not a day for KQ, so I'd just let that slide. Davis, what would be your expectation on global markets this week? On commodities, but before we go into global stocks.
I'd expect commodities to continue going up. On that question for oil, I guess it's on a case-by-case basis because airline companies are really struggling with a myriad of things, to be honest. And I would assume that they hedge these losses early on, in a sense. But it's... Honestly, yeah, dealing with a lot of things all at once. With regard to global stocks, I expect commodities to continue going up because of these supply chain shocks as they continue going forward. And then also what, as people have all this spending power, purchasing power and the like, because of the Fed giving them all this money, I would expect prices again of certain commodities to continue going up, like lumber, for example, as people renovate their homes, as people build new homes, and a lot of sawmills had actually cut off production, which is driving the price of lumber up. So And then we also have to take into the account the Fed's printing, you know, more money chasing less goods and services will obviously lead to asset price inflation. The major risk you have to consider going forward if you're looking at global stocks is inflation, in light of all this buying that's going on. And so you may need to consider a good hedge such as gold. Of course, it's not advice, it's just good to consider and look at gold as a hedge, because gold acts as one of the greatest hedges to inflation. With regard to now stock prices themselves, if you look at these major conglomerates, if you want to call them that, so the major tech stocks, you know, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, there was an interesting argument that I saw. Someone was arguing you shouldn't invest into African ETFs, that's exchange traded funds, because in a lot of these African countries, you'll find that a lot of their growth in GDP and the like goes back to these same 5-6 companies. That's like, for example, every dollar spent in venture capitalism, 40 cents on the dollar goes to Facebook, Apple, Google on advertising and the like. So it might even be it might be better to invest rather than invest in African markets. It might be better to invest
in them directly.
In those 5-6 companies, because when GDP goes up, these companies will always go up. You know, there's a lot of industry consolidation. They'll absorb almost all competition. We need them for almost everything. I mean, Facebook has now started WhatsApp payments and the like. You can imagine just the earnings potential of that alone. Google takes up almost all the traffic. Apple is something else all on its own. But there's something I was looking at a few weeks ago. So this is statistics, yeah. So between 2000 and 2009, emerging markets did 9.8% on average. Those are returns, while the S&P did 0.1% in that time period. And the reason why this occurred is, remember, there was the dot-com bubble, the dot-com crash, because assets were highly valued and then they all crashed and the like. But then now between 2010 and 2019, emerging markets did 3.7%, whereas the S&P did 13.5%. That's compounded annually. And so it could be that emerging markets might be the focus of a lot of investors right now, especially considering that on relative terms, relative to the S&P 500 and the like, they're undervalued on relative terms. So it's, yeah, a lot of considerations. At least you can give a bull and bear case for both investing in global markets, that's for the US, or investing in local markets. I'd expect, among other things you should know, why foreigners can be averse toward investing in our local market is because of what's that thing called? Currency depreciation. To invest in our market, you need to turn dollars into shillings. Shillings have been losing value to the dollar. Of course, going forward, I would expect the shilling to increase in value relative to the dollar because of all this money that's being printed around. Yeah, so just among the things that you should consider, whether you're in global or local markets alike.
Very interesting, David. What generally would be your thoughts on and what are specific companies that you might really be looking into? I know there's been a lot of activity on the S&P 500. And just to give guys on how these performed last week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up last week about 2.3%. The S&P was up as well, about 0.8%.
Yeah.
So, I think at times it's always very interesting how most of these global companies, most of the global indices are usually up, because I'm trying to look, and I'm just always looking at them, and I'm seeing last week most of these markets, apart from the Shanghai Composite and the Nasdaq 100, all the major global, the Euro stocks as well was down, but most of these other companies, most of these major global indices were actually up. I don't know if that would be the case for African indices.
Yeah, they've actually been going up and recovering. I think I was seeing Zimbabwe is giving a return of, I think, 80% year to date, something along those lines. I was so surprised.
And you see, Zimbabwe, though, one thing that people really need to understand as well is that at times you can always be able to find out, you can figure out that stuff like Zimbabwe, whenever you're looking at them, it's always in local currency terms.
Yeah.
So that would be the only challenge that guys really need to understand. But I think if we can get returns from African markets, even if it's in local currency terms. You see, if you invested this through the dollar, and it's really not been hit by that much inflation, the currency has not depreciated, then technically you'll still be able to get an almost similar returns when you're buying from these markets as well.
Well, I'm actually looking at Zimbabwe. This is by Mango Capital, a really good chart I saw earlier in the morning. So in the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange, the year-to-date returns in local currency is 81.11%. And then in USD, it's actually 75%. I was so surprised. Kumbe, that market is doing well. Going forward with regard to the US market, it's good to bear in mind that, there are those who argue that we're in a new super cycle for tech stocks, but, you know, every few decades or so, people argue that we're in a new super cycle. You have to realize that the S&P and the like are trading at a PE of, that's price to earnings, forward looking of roughly 35 times. And the average PE of these companies or of this market is roughly 16 to 19 times. Okay. So that would mean that for the market to return to its average, it would have to give a return over the next 10 years of roughly 1%. You get? So people are taking into account the fact that going forward, the market may really underperform. Because stocks are so highly valued and future growth is already taken into account right now. I mean, you have companies trading at PE ratios of 1,000 and the like. Me, if I were to invest in global stocks, of course, it would just be the main companies, because that's, you know, Facebook, Amazon. No, I'm not saying you invest in them, just that I would. So Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft is a really good company. Wow. Microsoft and Facebook and Google. So those are companies that you'd look into, because a lot of them take into the growth that's happening across countries, not only in the US but globally. And one thing I wanted to mention, but I've forgotten.
Anyway. Don't worry. I'm sure if you don't mention it today, guys, you will always be able to catch us up on Wednesday. Yeah. And also for you guys, if you're wondering, we're bringing in African markets through Hisa app in the next update. So as usual, you definitely want to catch up what's really coming up new by just getting the Hisa app, so that when the update is ready, you don't get to start afresh. We're just waiting for a few regulatory approvals and we'll be able to get trading going on both in local and offshore market. And I'm seeing we'll be able to get in markets, the Kenya, Uganda, we'll be able to check Nigeria as well. You can also be able to check South Africa, you can also be able to check, let me just confirm on all markets, Botswana, Ghana, South Africa, Lusaka, Malawi, the Nigerian Stock Exchange, Uganda, and of course Zimbabwe. So a lot of data is coming up with the next update for Hisa app. I'm sure that's something we'd all really love to have a look at. So you definitely want to just check it as well on Hisa. I don't know if there's anything that we left with today. Maybe I'd let Davis give a few parting shots before we call today's session an end.
Parting shots. So when you try to look for words of wisdom.
Words of wisdom. Invest wisely.
Yeah, just invest wisely. Hey, honestly. Try invest based on fundamentals. Because I was seeing Dogecoin the other day. Oh, gosh. I can't believe people buy into this. I remember someone cracking a joke. If you like Dogecoin at, I think, 95 cents, you love it at 45 cents. You know, people were expecting at the share price to rally because of Elon Musk. But alas, you know, it was only based on what?
It's a meme stock. It's a meme crypto.
Yeah, people are not buying it for actual value. There's this thing I normally see where people tell you, if you'd invested in this at this point in time, you'd have made X returns, etc. Don't listen to such noise. You know, the thing is, in hindsight, everything seems to make sense. In that moment, things don't make sense. A good case in point is Amazon. Amazon traded sideways for 10 years. Would you have held the stock for 10 years between, I think, 2000 and 2009, 2010? The share price was barely moving after how it crashed post the dot-com bubble. You can imagine all the ups and downs you'd have had to hang on, and not knowing whether it would become the behemoth that it is because of, you know, Amazon Web Services and the online shifts with regard to majority of the populace. So such things. Always just be smart, live in the present moment, invest in those companies that you believe have good fundamentals, and take into account a future growth. Oh yeah, the thing I'd forgotten that I wanted to mention was, remember Warren Buffett showed a chart of companies in 1989, I believe 30 companies, and then he showed a chart of those of the top 30 companies today. None of those companies were there. You get, so you really don't know what the future holds. You just have to be agile, invest in good fundamental companies, unless future trends shift, and yeah, be agile in that way. That's me. What about you, Felix?
Well, let me just give guys a brief update before we conclude. Once again, getting data from HISA on the market, how the live market is performing. And I know we've really discussed on what really happened last week. We've not had any discussion on what's happening this week. Apart from I&M, of course. Davis, I'm seeing I&M is down again to... it's up 5.6%. NSE is up 7.7%. Crown is definitely up 8% because of those 800 shares that have traded. Housing Finance is up 8.7%, and Transcentury Limited is up 9%. On the loser side, I'm seeing Scan Group is down 2.6%. Home Africa is down as well, 2.5%. Sanlam is down 1.3%. Diamond Trust Bank is down 0.39%. And of course, Centum continues to lose at 0.34%.
Yeah, Centum has really gone down. Company,
I know you want to talk on Centum. Centum and BTB probably on the loser side. Scan Group, if you may. But we've talked about Crown. We've talked about I&M. We touched on Housing Finance when it was declining, and looks like, so guys, just understand how the market is always funny. A few minutes ago, about 20 minutes back, we were talking about Housing Finance on the decline, and now it's already up 8%.
In the short term, the market is voting machine. In the long term, it's a weighing machine. You know, it weighs the fundamentals, but in the short term, there'll be a lot of noise. You can...
I think we'll definitely have to put that up somewhere. In the short term, the market is a voting machine, and in the long term, it's a weighing machine. So always remember that.
Yeah.
So Davis, you want to mention something on? And I think Britam has just joined the losers list from nowhere, down about 1%. Yeah. But you do just want to touch on Centum and BTB.
Centum.
Why Centum losing? Because Centum has really been on the decline.
Yeah. Hey, investors are really getting hurt there. A major problem Centum faces is, of course, cash flows. I've seen in the past that people value this company based on net asset value. Now, that's good and the like. The problem is, you need a company that's giving you cash flows, in a sense. And so Centum only gets those cash flows, I believe, when people make deposits on what, the housing units, or they completely buy out housing units. So in the short term, and especially now, the portfolio has really been suffering, at least with regard to cash flow, from what I've been seeing. I remember one of the assets that they have is Longhorn. I believe they're one of the majority shareholders. You know what's happened in the markets. Longhorn is suffering because children had gone home, and so, you know, that weighed down on Centum, who is supposed to be a beneficiary of Longhorn doing really well. But I've really seen that sell-off. I believe, or at least from what I hear, that Centum is a really good company. I actually want to start looking at it, maybe do some of the parts on it, you know, look at the individual parts of the company, see how they add up to the whole, rather than valuing it based on maybe book value or net asset value, if you will.
And also, just to give guys a slight shocker, in 2014, Centum was trading at 73 shillings. In 2017, Centum was trading at 44 shillings. And just to look at it from a year ago, I'm seeing Centum was trading at prices of about 24. So I don't know if Centum will pull a Nation Media Group. I'm seeing Eric Asuma wants to say something on Nation Media. Anytime we touch on media, Eric Asuma is always there to give us insights of the media space. Nation Media Group, I don't know if Centum would pull another NMG.
But then they were supposed to.
Two different companies as well.
They're supposed to do a buyback. Actually, the ones who initiated that buyback story. But
for NMG, I don't know if they're doing it. And if they're doing it, they should make it so clear to us. Eric, you'd want to say something on Nation Media.
Interesting. Speaking of the buyback, I think it's important to know that they're currently doing it.
Ah.
I think they've already
initiated the
process.
Mm-hmm.
With regards to getting advisors and informing the CEO that we began the process.
Ah, okay.
So I'm hoping in the next few weeks we'll be getting some information from the regulator just to how the structure of that paper. But from a company perspective, I don't expect much from Asian Media. I think I've mentioned to you again.
Yeah.
I was looking at the results.
Results are really bad. Yeah. But a buyback can actually help. It will increase earnings per share technically.
Yeah,
so because now you have less shares outstanding, even though earnings have really been going down. So unless they are buying back a lot of that.
I think the good thing about Nation Media Group, I think they are one of the few companies at Tennessee with less debt.
They have a lot of cash on hand. By
they have a lot of cash at hand. That's why I think they've been able to even pay their increase the employee salary even after that reduction in 2020.
Yeah.
So I think they have a lot of cash now. So I think that will also help them share some of this paper.
Yeah, we'll see what happens going forward.
Interesting. But I'm also looking on Capital Cube. Capital Cube is a site that you can actually use for analysis. And also with the next ISA update, I know definitely Jackson and the team are working on giving us charts as well. So you don't have to worry about this coming in. I'm seeing Centum. We were talking about Centum before we touched into NMG. Centum, the technical indicators are at 52. Fundamental analysis is way, way down at 28%.
I don't think it's hit a floor yet. Even me, I used to do technical analysis back in the day.
Yeah, but the RSI for Centum has actually gone below 30 for the first, no, it's not for the first time, but going below 30, maybe the next time we talk about technical indicators, I'll be able to explain what it means for an RSI. So technically, Centum is trading at way, way oversold territory. It's oversold, but it needs a lot of support onto it. So that's it. Eric, maybe you'd want to give your parting shots. I know we've called these parting shots too many times, but Eric just came in and I just want him to say a thing or two.
Interesting. Nothing much really, but I think it's going to be an interesting week in the markets.
Anything we're expecting from HISA?
We've been making progress with regards to some sort of regulatory headways. I think hopefully in the course of the month we'll have an update to the users in terms of how soon should we start the ability to place trades.
Oh, okay.
So it's an interesting month, so I think hopefully in the course of the month we'll be able to give out a more comprehensive say report in terms of how we are heading towards trading.
Oh, okay.
Alright guys, I guess that's it for us here at HISA. As usual, every Monday we'll be able to see you guys again next week on Monday. But don't forget we have Bulls, Bears and Whiskey on Wednesday. And on Friday, definitely, the team led by Ali Mwakaneno will be here with We're Curious. So thank you all and have a lovely week ahead. Bye-bye.